A Woman of No Importance, Act 4. In the sitting room at Mrs. Arbuthnot's house, there is a large, open French window at the back, looking onto the garden. Gerald is writing at the table. Enter Alice, the maid, to announce Lady Hunstanton and Mrs. Allenby.
Lady Hunstanton and Mrs. Allenby?
Exit Alice.
Good morning, Gerald.
Good morning, Lady Hunstanton. Good morning, Mrs. Allenby.
We came to inquire for your dear mother, Gerald. I hope she's better.
My mother has not come down yet, Lady Hunstanton.
Oh, I'm afraid the heat was too much for her last night. I think there must have been thunder in the air. Well, perhaps it was the music. Music makes one feel so romantic. At least it always gets on one's nerves.
It's the same thing nowadays.
I am so glad. I don't know what you mean, dear. I'm afraid you mean something wrong. Oh, I see you're examining Mrs. Arbuthnot's pretty room. Isn't it nice and old-fashioned?
It looks quite the happy English home.
That's just the word, dear. That just describes it. One feels your mother's good influence in everything she has about her, Gerald.
Lord Illingworth says that all influence is bad, but that a good influence is the worst in the world.
When Lord Illingworth knows Mrs. Arbuthnot better, he will change his mind. I must certainly bring him here.
I should like to see Lord Illingworth in a happy English home.
It would do him a great deal of good, dear. Most women in London nowadays seem to furnish their rooms with nothing but orchids, foreigners, and French novels. But here we have the room of a sweet saint, fresh natural flowers, books that don't shock one, pictures that one could look at without blushing.
But I like blushing.
Well, there's a good deal to be said for blushing, if one can do it at the proper moment. Poor dear Hunstanton used to tell me I didn't blush nearly often enough. But then he was so very particular. He wouldn't let me know any of his men friends except those who were over 70, like poor Lord Ashton, who afterwards, by the way, was brought into the divorce court. A most unfortunate case.
I delight in men over 70. They always offer one the devotion of a lifetime. I think 70 an ideal age for a man.
She is quite incorrigible, Gerald, isn't she? By the by, Gerald, I hope your dear mother will come and see me more often now. You and Lord Illingworth start almost immediately, don't you?
I have given up my intention of being Lord Illingworth's secretary.
Surely not, Gerald. Oh, it would be most unwise of you. What reason can you have?
I don't think I should be suitable for the post.
I wish Lord Illingworth would ask me to be his secretary, but he says I'm not serious enough.
My dear, you really mustn't talk like that in this house. Mrs. Arbuthnot doesn't know anything about the wicked society in which we all live. She won't go into it. She is far too good. I consider it was a great honor her coming to me last night. It gave quite an atmosphere of respectability to the party.
Ah, that must have been what you thought was thunder in the air.
My dear, how can you say that? There is no resemblance between the two things at all. But really, Gerald, what do you mean by not being suitable?
Lord Illingworth's views of life and mine are too different.
But my dear Gerald, at your age you shouldn't have any views of life. They are quite out of place. You must be guided by others in this matter. Lord Illingworth has made you the most flattering offer, and traveling with him you would see the world, as much of it at least as one should look at, under the best auspices possible, and stay with all the right people, which is so important at this solemn moment in your career.
I don't want to see the world. I've seen enough of it.
I hope you don't think you have exhausted life, Mr. Arbuthnot. When a man says that, one knows that life has exhausted him.
I don't wish to leave my mother.
Now, Gerald, that is pure laziness on your part. Not leave your mother. If I were your mother, I would insist on your going.
Enter Alice.
Mrs. Arbuthnot's compliments, my lady, but she has a bad headache and cannot see anyone this morning.
Alice exits.
A bad headache? Oh, I'm so sorry. Perhaps you'll bring her up to Hunstanton this afternoon if she's better, Gerald?
I'm afraid not this afternoon, Lady Hunstanton.
Oh, well, tomorrow then? If you had a father, Gerald, he wouldn't let you waste your life here. He would send you off with Lord Illingworth at once. But mothers are so weak. They give in to their sons in everything. We are all hard. C- Come, dear, I must call at the rectory and inquire for Mrs. Daubeny, who I'm afraid is far from well. It's wonderful how the Archdeacon bears up, quite wonderful. He is the most sympathetic of husbands. Quite a model. Goodbye, Gerald. Give my fondest love to your mother.
Goodbye, Mr. Arbuthnot.
Goodbye.
Lady Hunstanton and Mrs. Allenby exit. Gerald sits and reads over the letter he's been writing.
What name can I sign? I, who have no right to any name.
Gerald signs a name, puts the letter into an envelope, addresses the envelope, and is about to seal it when Mrs. Arbuthnot enters. Gerald lays down sealing wax. Mother and son look at each other. Lady Hunstanton and Mrs. Allenby can be seen through the French window.
Goodbye again, Gerald. We are taking the shortcut across your pretty garden. Now remember my advice to you. Start at once with Lord Illingworth.
Au revoir, Mr. Arbuthnot. Mind you bring me back something nice from your travels. Not an Indian shawl. On no account an Indian shawl.
Lady Hunstanton and Mrs. Allenby exit.
Mother, I have just written to him.
To whom?
To my father. I have written to tell him to come here at 4 o'clock this afternoon.
He shall not come here. He shall not cross the threshold of my house.
He must come.
Gerald, if you are going away with Lord Illingworth, go at once. Go before it kills me, but don't ask me to meet him.
Mother, you don't understand. Nothing in the world would induce me to go away with Lord Illingworth or to leave you. Surely you know me well enough for that. No, I have written to him to say...
What can you have to say to him?
Can't you guess, Mother, what I have written in this letter?
No.
Mother, surely you can. Think what must be done now, at once, within the next few days.
There is nothing to be done.
I have written to Lord Illingworth to tell him that he must marry you.
Marry me?
Mother, I will force him to do it. The wrong that has been done you must be repaired. Atonement must be made. Justice may be slow, Mother, but it comes in the end. In a few days you shall be Lord Illingworth's lawful wife.
But, Gerald...
I will insist upon his doing it. I will make him do it. He will not dare to refuse.
But, Gerald... It is I who refuse. I will not marry Lord Illingworth.
Not marry him? Mother!
I will not marry him.
But you don't understand. It is for your sake I am talking, not for mine. This marriage, this necessary marriage, this marriage, which for obvious reasons must inevitably take place, will not help me, will not give me a name that will be really rightly mine to bear. But surely it will be something for you, that you, my mother, should, however late, become the wife of the man who is my father. Will that not be something?
I will not marry him.
Mother, you must.
I will not. You talk of atonement for a wrong done. What atonement can be made to me? There is no atonement possible. I am disgraced. He is not. That is all. It is the usual history of a man and a woman, as it usually happens. As it always happens. And the ending is the ordinary ending. The woman suffers, the man goes free.
I don't know if that is the ordinary ending, Mother. I hope it is not. But your life, at any rate, shall not end like that. The man shall make whatever reparation is possible. It is not enough. It does not wipe out the past. I know that. But at least it makes the future better.
I refuse.
If he came to you himself and asked you to be his wife, you would give him a different answer. Remember, he is my father.
If he came himself, which he will not do, my answer would be the same. Remember, I am your mother.
Mother, you make it terribly difficult for me by talking like that, and I can't understand why you won't look at this matter from the right, from the only proper standpoint. It is to take away the bitterness out of your life, to take away the shadow that lies on your name, that this marriage must take place. There's no alternative. And after the marriage, you and I can go away together. But the marriage must take place first. It is a duty that you owe not merely to yourself, but to all other women, yes, to all the other women in the world, lest he betray more.
I owe nothing to other women. There is not one of them to help me. There is not one woman in the world to whom I could go for pity if I would take it, or for sympathy if I could win it. Women are hard on each other. That girl last night, good though she is, fled from the room as though I were a tainted thing. She was right. I am a tainted thing. But my wrongs are my own, and I will bear them alone. I must bear them alone.
What have women who have not sinned to do with me, or I with them? We do not understand each other.